Hi, friends. Owen Locke and Rick Talley here from Locke & Company Distilling.
First off, we'd like to thank Sam and Jay at the Unfiltered Podcast for all they do in our industry, community, and more importantly, it's just good to work with great guys like them. Owen and I are Colorado natives. We've spent more than a decade perfecting our Aspen-aged rye whiskey, and we think it's well worth the wait. Rye whiskey usually isn't for the faint of heart, but we have to say this is hands down some of the smoothest rye on the market.
That comes from our 95% rye, 5% barley mash bill, and our unique aging process. We age our whiskey in smaller 30-gallon barrels for a minimum of 2 years, and then we finish the rye by adding hand-cut and hand-charred aspen discs harvested from our family property outside of Fairplay, Colorado. This artisanal process produces an extremely smooth rye with notes of light brown sugar, cinnamon, to balance the spiciness of the rye grain, truly delivering a taste like none other.
So, if you enjoy gold medal winning spirits, want to support small business, and need a gift for the holidays or for yourself, please consider making Locke & Co. Aspen Aged Rye Whiskey your next purchase.
You can find our Aspen Aged Rye Whiskey at many bars and restaurants and most liquor stores on the Front Range and throughout Colorado. Check us out at lockandcodistilling.com. That's L-O-C-K-E at lockandcodistilling.com. Cheers from Rick and Owen.
Show Jay and I jumped on Zoom. We talked to Jesse and Nathan Haft, who are the owners of Ensign Beverage and First Street Brewing in Hastings, Nebraska. They were great people. Really, really enjoyed talking to them. They're doing some awesome stuff in Hastings. Hoping to have them out here this summer in Denver, actually, and learn a little bit more about their little train ride that they're putting together. So it was really cool. And so, I hope you enjoyed the interview that we did with them. To everybody who is participating in the hashtag 30 Days of Craftsmas, much, much appreciated. We have some front runners. There are about four or five of you out there who are competing for the top three prizes. Thanks to all of our sponsors, by the way, for putting some stuff out there. We really, really appreciate it. We thank you, as always, for the support. And hope you enjoy this conversation that Jay and I had with Nathan and Jesse Haft from First Street Brewing and Ensign Beverage out of Hastings, Nebraska. Have a great weekend. Shake it, shake it, sugary. Just don't tell them that you know me.
Well, you know, if you're in Nebraska, you bleed red. Wow.
You can't live here and not be a Huskers fan. It's not possible.
Hold on.
Just a rule, huh?
See if you can see my. Shit! I gotta pick it up and bring it over here.
We do have a Husker cooler up there. It's there one go. Of the ones we take to an event every now and then. So, we did a couple fun smaller.
No, I am not a Husker fan. This is a signed Hayden Fry football helmet. I hate Nebraska.
I guess it was better than a Buffs helmet. No.
Anyhow, sorry about that.
We are big football fans, but you know what? We are bigger volleyball fans.
Yeah.
We really enjoy watching the Huskers win.
I'm actually a transplant to Nebraska. I'm originally from Florida, so I grew up playing volleyball on the beach. And we moved here, and all of a sudden there was an audience for volleyball. I was like, what?
That's cool, yeah.
I've loved it ever since. The women's team at Nebraska is just phenomenal. And actually, the Hastings College team, phenomenal as well. We go to their games all the time.
So, Nathan, you're from – so I was looking at your LinkedIn. Did you go to Vanderbilt? Is that correct?
I did, yes.
So you're smart, obviously.
It was a music degree, so, you know, kind of.
What was your musicality? What was your preference?
I am actually a classical percussionist, or was back in the day. So, that's what led to me going to Vanderbilt, and had a great time there, great experience. That got me from Orlando to Nashville, and I ended up sticking around Nashville for about 15 years, including the time I was in school, and during that time I met Jesse.
Yeah.
And, Nebraska girl brought me home.
Are we recording, Sam? Because this is great.
We are. Don't worry. I will edit. I'm going to make this sound good. Okay, so as we slow roll into this, can you two introduce yourselves to Jay and I, and then we'll jump into the conversation.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jesse Haft here in Hastings, Nebraska.
I'm Nathan Haft.
We're the owners of First Street Brewing Company and Ensign Beverage.
So you make kombucha, hard kombucha, and beer. Oh. So can we just kind of, I guess let's go back to, you know, we'll kind of bounce around a little bit, and Jay and I will text and kind of tell each other to ask different questions. But how did you decide to go, like what came first, the brewery or the kombucha? Yeah.
Brewery came first. So I have a weird path to how I became a brewer. Obviously, as we just talked about, my degree is in classical music. But while I was in school, and actually even before I went to Vanderbilt, I worked in hotels. I worked for Walt Disney World when I lived in Orlando. And when I was at Vanderbilt, I worked at the Lowe's Vanderbilt Hotel. And after graduating, I had some opportunities to move up in that business. And so I did, and ended up as the director of guest services for a Five Diamond Hotel. And I was about 26 years old and realized I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. So I jumped ship and started teaching myself programming. Got really heavy into that, spent a long time doing that, and became a fairly sought after data scientist. And that's what gave us the ability to move to Nebraska when we had a reason to do so. And
we moved here in 2000. We moved to Hastings from Nashville in 2012. Yep. So almost immediately we started looking, thinking of this town of 25,000 was maybe missing a brewery. And so we started doing some research, and Nathan was doing some home brewing at the time. And we started looking at buildings. One of the buildings that we immediately went to is actually the building that we're in. It's a little under 9,000 square foot in downtown Hastings. And it didn't work out with the purchase right then. The guy wasn't really wanting to sell. And so we looked at a few more, and just that didn't work out. Nathan got busy with another project, and I got busy with another project. And so we kind of put things on hold. And then it was in 2015, the opportunity came back around, and the guy that the building that we're in came to us and said, "Hey, I think I'm ready to sell." So in about a matter of a month. Yeah, we finished up the business plan, raised all the capital that we needed, and launched the business, started construction. And it took about 1 year of construction on this building to get it where we wanted it. And we sold our first beer in the tap room in September of 2016. And that was to my father. Yep. Remember that? Yeah. He had just gotten done with his chemo treatment. And we called him up and said, "Hey, we want to sell you the first beer." So he, after this treatment, he came over and had a beer.
Yep.
Well, that's a pretty damn good story right there. What did he go with? What kind of style?
Well, we only had one beer on tap at that time, and that was we just called it Batch One because it was my Kolsch recipe, but it was our first time brewing on this system and really getting things dialed in. It was just a little bit off from where I wanted it to be, so we just called it Batch Number One. But the great thing about brewing a Kolsch first is that it gave me a great baseline to determine what adjustments I needed to make.
Yeah, you're not making an easy beer. If you're starting with a Kolsch, it's not like you're dumping a bunch of hops into a hazy IPA.
Yeah, the great thing about that style of beer is it's such a simple recipe that there's no place to hide. So if there's anything that's off, it becomes very obvious, and that's why I wanted to brew that first.
Awesome. And how well was that first batch number one pint received by the father-in-law?
Really well. Everybody really enjoyed it, it just wasn't quite where I wanted it to be. So when we did introduce the actual Kolsch, everybody was like, "Oh yeah, that's good."
So. Right on. So we've done some remote interviews across the Midwest, but I think this is definitely our first Nebraska interview, Sam. Right?
It is. Yes. It hurts, but yeah,
How many? How many?
And I see the Huskers bag back there.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Too.
They were talking about it. What number are you in the grand scheme of Nebraska breweries? I mean, I can't imagine there's a ton.
Yeah.
There's 52 or 50. Maybe I'm right at 55. We really should probably know this number. Nathan actually serves on the board for the Nebraska Craft Brewers Guild, so he is the
vice president.
Whoa! Now. Yeah, that.
So he's a big deal.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's just a great group of people. We had support from the other breweries in the state of Nebraska since we've started. I know one of the things that Nathan always talks about is if he had a question about when he was developing a recipe, or if he had an equipment question, it was very easy for him to go out and ask those questions, and they were very helpful. And
We have an amazingly supportive community of brewers. If you run into an issue, it's very easy to call up one of the other brewers. And we share ideas. We do collaboration brews together. It's a wonderful environment.
Brotherhood?
Yeah, it's a brotherhood, I would say. Sisterhood. There's some yeah. female brewers there too. But, Thunderhead is a brewery that's about an hour away. Trevor's been brewing since 99, so he's one of the older breweries here in Nebraska. And there are so many times where I'm like, hey, I'm running into this weird issue. And he just would say, oh, yeah, I've done that. Here's what you do. He's run into all the problems, so that made my life a lot easier.
So when you guys opened, like, what is the scene like as a whole? And actually, even now, you know, I growing up in Iowa, I think, you know, Jay and I have talked about this plenty of times. It's now become a different scene in Iowa just because of Toppling Goliath and even Big Grove, where you can get access to that. What was it like when you opened up, and what is it like now in terms of your access to craft beer in Nebraska as a whole?
Yeah, that changed obviously nationwide, and Nebraska was no exception there. In Hastings, here in Hastings, as we opened up, there was actually another brewery that opened up just down the street too. And that one's called Steeple Brewing Company. And so Hastings is actually the only, I think, city outside of Lincoln and Omaha that has two actually functioning breweries in it. So that's kind of fun. Everything else just has one, but they're scattered throughout the state, and there's not a bad one out there. So it's been kind of fun.
And I've spent a lot of time on I-80 over the years. I don't think I've ever zoned out in the middle of Nebraska and thought to myself, oh, Grand Island, this seems like a good place to pull over for a beer.
That's the exit that you want to remember, right? Because yeah. You want to go north to Grand Island, do a couple great ones there. Kincaidor and Prairie Pride are both up there. And then if you want to go south at that exit, that's where you're going to find us in Steeple.
That's where you guys are. All right. Yeah. All right. See, I did not grow up in Iowa. I grew up in Denver, but unfortunately, I have quite a bit of family in Omaha.
Yes, you do.
And we, whether we like it or not, I tend to get back there at least once a year now these days. So I guess I have a new halfway point that's not really halfway anymore. So
no, I'm excited about the prospect of now when I drive to Iowa City, I will be able to come see you too and drink your beers. I'm very, very excited.
We've got another fun thing that you can do. And I think maybe we've talked a little bit about this on some of our messages back and forth. But we do a program called Hop on the Train. We've done it now. I think we've done five different trips out there, and we actually were able to get one in this year in September. So we were felt very fortunate. It was kind of that middle ground, you know, where things, you know, the rates, COVID rates were low. And so we were able to safely take seven people out to Colorado. So what we do is we're right here in Hastings, right across the street from Amtrak.
California Zephyr.
Yeah, yeah. Zephyr. Yeah, it goes right by us, so you can just hop on that train and land right outside our back door, and we'll make sure you get some good beer in your belly.
Hold on, okay.
Fucking cool.
It is. Okay, so tell us.
That's fucking cool.
Let's spend a few minutes on this, right? And then we can jump back to whether or not Nathan made good beer, and we'll talk about kombucha. But
I've ridden the Zephyr.
Yeah.
Like, this is amazing. So tell us how it works, and are you planning for a summer 2021?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we, how it works is you come here to the brewery, we feed you and we drink until the train leaves the station, which is, should be at 2 in the morning, 1:47, but you know how that Zephyr is sometimes.
So then you need a sleeper drinking. Car.
Yeah. That's a possibility.
Not if you drink enough, Jay, you just fall asleep.
And they got those great seats that leave.
Exactly. Yeah. You're like,
yeah.
I tell people to travel comfortable. So bring your pillow, bring your eye mask, bring your earbuds, and we're just going to get
hammered.
And you're going to wake up in Denver. So that's great. You know, right. And you know what can happen in Denver. I mean, when we're down there, this last time in September, we were able to visit 10 different breweries. And we were able to, some of them, we were able to make connections with the owners, and they were able to be there and drink with us. We've had better success in years past just because of what's going on right now with COVID, but I anticipate that will change again. And so, yeah, we just party go and visit breweries, tours, and drink for 2 or 3 days in Denver, and then we hop on the train and come home.
Yep. So whose idea was this?
Sounds like the mastermind of an Amtrak marketing professional to me. No, Sam, I have don't
reached
you think?
Out. If Amtrak ever gets to see this, I have reached out to their marketing group multiple times because I think beer tourism is a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it really is.
I think that this could be a really fun program. I mean, let's just all hop on the train and take a ride.
And my goal is I want my own train car.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, you guys should have the First State Brewing Company train car the Ensign Kombucha.
Yep. The caboose.
Whatever the hell the name of the one is where they serve food and drinks. Bar car.
There you go.
Yeah. You know,
so I think there are planned trips out of Union Station in Denver from here to the western slope of Colorado that do wine and beer. And then I've heard about trips that go up and down the coast in California. Why the hell wouldn't they take advantage of this and funnel people directly into Denver, where we have about 50-ish breweries similar to Nebraska? So,
well, and you know, our hope was always too that while we would like to take groups out of here to Hastings, to Denver, or to Chicago, right? Because we can go the other way. We would really like for people from Denver to hop on the train and come here for the weekend. This downtown Hastings that we're in, it's just so great. I mean, it's just two breweries, right? So you've got that. We have in non-COVID times, we have a lot of festivals going on. A beer festival that's 10 years old, we usually get around 1,000 people to attend. So that's a fun little thing to do. If you research downtown Hastings, you're going to be quite surprised in all the amenities that you can find. Yeah. It's a fun week. It would be a fabulous weekend for a couple.
I mean, a couple of podcast hosts.
There you go.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll leave our wives and kids at home. I think this is Jay and I need to do this for research. All right, let's back up a little bit. What made you think that you made good enough beer for you two to open up First Street Brewing Company?
Well, before we opened the brewery, I'd been home brewing for 12 years or so, and it was always just something I did to connect with other people. In the type of programming work I did, if I tried to discuss what I was working on, most people, if you weren't a programmer, your eyes basically glazed over, and they were like, whereas with beer, I could hand it to somebody and say, hey, what do you think of this? And, you know, we did a couple small competitions in Nashville, nothing really major, but people really liked the beer. And then when we moved here, a lot of people in our community really liked our beer, and it just felt like something we could contribute to Hastings that would help take it to the next level. Hastings is an amazing town, and I fell in love with it when we moved here, and it felt like the right thing for us to add to our community.
Sorry, go ahead. Go, Jesse. No,
I think one of the best things that we do on the beer side of things is the diversity of different styles of brews that we do. You're not only going to find like great stouts and Belgian style beers, you're going to have excellent sours. And then also we do a lot of nitro beers here too. So there's just a good variety on the beer side. It's very easy to find something that you're going to like.
So is Hastings one of those places where you have enough palate where folks are going to come in and drink that, you know, maybe a five taster sampler? Or is it one of those things where tell us, assuming that where you are and where I grew up, you know, you're walking somebody from a Busch Light all the way to I'm trying to think like a Topping Goliath Pseudo Sioux, right? Like that's a big jump. How do you get to, how does that progression happen? I guess, you know, when you began to now what you're doing?
I would say it happens very organically. You know, there's so many times, just a magical moment when I have somebody walk in and say, I've never had a craft beer in my life. What do you got? And then I get to step them through different styles and let them try different things. And, you know, we brewed the Kolsch first because we were expecting that to be kind of our lawnmower beer that everybody would gravitate towards. But honestly, right away, people gravitated towards our back alley porter. It surprised the heck out of me because I was expecting everybody to go for the light stuff. And as soon as I put out that porter, everybody was on top of it.
Yeah, it's been one of our best sellers since day one and has been picked up across the state by many bars.
And right now, our best-selling beer is a hazy IPA, so it isn't that different here than anywhere else. You know, that style just seems to permeate everything.
Where does something like that fit into the grand scheme of things of a town of only 25,000 people? I mean, I've got to assume that there were probably a couple of bars that have been around way longer than you and the other brewery. So you said it's been a positive experience, but what is that? How does that work? I mean, do you guys mesh well with that kind of bar scene and the other restaurants?
Have been the bars in town, restaurants in town have been all been very supportive. I mean, you'll find our beer on tap at a lot of those places, you know, that serve food. We don't serve food. So that is one of the different things that we have going for us. It was something that was very intentional. And if you listen in the background, you're going to hear there's a train going by right now.
That's crazy.
That's so awesome.
That's awesome. That is so awesome.
But it is something a little different. We have food trucks from time to time, but food has never been a focus of ours. It's really truly about brewing the beer and making the best beer possible.
Yeah. And
kombucha.
We've been able to develop great relationships with all of the restaurants and bars in our area. There are so many of them that we would go and sit and talk about starting this whole thing. And I mean, I remember when we first started, we went to our friend Owen, who has a great place called Kitty's here in town. And we were like, hey, we've made this beer. We'd love for you to carry it. And he's like, man, I remember you sitting at the end of the bar, just dreaming about this and talking about how you were going to do this. And now here you are. So of course I'm going to take your beer. And he put on our porter first thing, which he had never really had many dark beers on tap there. And now he has four different beers of ours on tap all the time.
Yeah.
So was it one of those things then, I guess, once you started, you know, obviously you're trying to, you know, make money over the bar and all that kind of stuff, but also put kegs in bars. Were you a known commodity by the time that you two went out to try to sell kegs to local restaurants?
We had done a lot of footwork. We'd gone out and done sampling and talked to different restaurant owners and bar owners and made sure they knew what we were bringing to the table.
It's just part of the process, I think, when you're trying to do a small business startup, is making those relationships, and beer is no different.
So. Was craft beer something that people wanted then when you were having those conversations? Like, was there a need, and then having a local brewery just made it a little bit, it kind of greased the wheels a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. That helped. Local beer has been a trend that's been on an uptick for, the last 10 years now, solidly. And so Hastings is no different. You know, if you look at Hastings as on the economic side of things, 25,000 people, I really feel is a really good microcosm of people, you know? I mean, even if you look at Denver, you're probably only really serving 25,000 people. Right. You know, and so at one time it just seems like you can really do a lot here and grow quickly and successfully. So it's just one of the things we feel very fortunate about where we are right now and where we're brewing and where we decided to set up shop.
Yeah.
So you're obviously canning stuff. You got the canned kombucha, but was distribution outside of kegs something you had talked about early on, or was that we've had some success, let's start putting beer and kombucha and hard kombucha in cans? Like, what does that conversation look like or sound like?
It was always part of the original plan. It was not something we did right away, just because that is a major piece of equipment that you add on there. So we definitely started out with just the kegs in the tap room and tried to build as many relationships as possible with bar and restaurant owners. The canning came later just to create further reach. And I just think it helps a lot with getting your name into people's households and getting a little bit more recognition with your brand. So it was an eventual step that we knew we'd have to take from the very beginning. And we just, what was it? About 2 years in?
2017, I think, at the end, maybe, is when we purchased the canning line. So we were a year and a half, I guess, open before we decided to make that leap.
But, and you had that space, obviously, to put that in.
Yeah. And we knew where it would go. And again, that goes back to this building location. Can't wait for you guys to hop on the train and get out here and see it someday. But you'll see why we chose this building. It's very functional for us, and we knew that it could go. We could have a canning line.
It's also part of the downtown without being right in the middle of it, which I really liked. It's got two big garage doors that allowed us to load things in and out of. It was the right fit, and it took this coming available and the city wanting us to get started that for us really to pull the trigger on it.
Yeah, you want to hear a fun piece of history about this building?
Yes,
Well, there's a couple, actually. It's really kind of a fun thing. We actually have the deed, the original deed of land signature from this that was deeded over to somebody from Ulysses S. Grant. And he granted this person the land to open up a feed and seed store on this corner. Because again, rail line, right? So that was here first and then right across the street. And then about where, as best as we can figure, about where Nathan's Brew Kettles sit, that was the first beer garden in Hastings.
Open air beer garden
back in the day. So that's kind of a fun little piece of history.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then on the other side of the wall, as we go west on this block, there's a building over there, a slotted building that's about 5,000 square foot, 6,000 square foot. And that was the first place that Kool-Aid was actually manufactured and distributed.
Oh, so we're waiting for that day.
Yeah, that we can like bust through that wall with a mug in our hand, right? And take over that building and start brewing some stuff in there too.
Well, tell us about.
There's got to be a beer name in all of that history someplace.
Yes.
Yeah. So we do an event every year. It is our of course, we can run a 0.5K. So it's a run around the block. And every year for the 0.5K, I've always tried to find a great way to integrate Kool-Aid into a beer. And so far, the best way I've been able to do it is I brew a Berliner Weiss, a nice little sour, lactose sour beer. And then we make our own Kool-Aid syrups to go in it instead of having a raspberry or a Woodruff syrup.
Kind of like a beer smoothie without the ice.
Yeah. Yep.
I love it.
Now the last year we had an entire bar of Kool-Aid syrups that people could choose from to make their own.
Well, tell us about I mean, obviously beer is a big thing on this podcast, but I think the folks who listen to it also like kombucha. So can we hear about that? I mean, because I have downed this can, and my wife has drank all of my non-alcoholic kombuchas, and it's delicious. So what the hell made you decide to do that as well?
Yeah, so I have been brewing kombucha since 1995. So
for a little while. You old sailor, you.
Yeah. I'll date myself, but it was the year I graduated high school. Okay. That summer, a friend of mine and I got a SCOBY. Well, we didn't call it a SCOBY back then. She called it a mushroom. Came from his aunt in Colorado.
Okay.
And she shipped us this mushroom and said it was helping her with weight loss and detox and just different things. And so we brewed up a batch and put it underneath his sink and did not take care of it at all. Like every now and then we might throw a little sugar in and we'd take a ladle and dip it in there and drink it. And it was horrible. It was so vinegary. And so I just remember literally having to plug your nose and having to like down it, you know? But I understood, I kind of learned the process there. When Nathan and I were living in Nashville, I had a soap company there, and the person next to me at the market that was selling kombucha at the same time. And a few years later, she had gotten her kombucha into Whole Foods, and I had gotten the soap that I was working on into Whole Foods as well. Ah. And I went into this Whole Foods in Nashville. It was when we were living here, but I had went back to a business trip to Nashville. And I saw her kombucha on tap. And I thought, that's amazing. Like, here we are 5 years later. Like, my soap's now in Whole Foods. And your kombucha is now in Whole Foods. And so I wanted to reconnect with her. And I did. And she kind of told me the story about how she was not being able to keep up, and this was kind of a trend that was coming along, and she was either going to have to do one of two things, either just give it up, or she was going to have to go get investors and decide whether or not she wanted to actually make this business fly. She decided to give it up at the time, and she ended up moving away, but I contacted her, and I asked her about some of her recipes, and I kind of started brewing a little bit more at home again. And on the countertop, you know, the typical what you think of home brewing kombucha, right? In the jar with the weird looking SCOBY on top. And I got to say, it was not even the best yet then. You know, I would try to put as much fruit in it that I could that I would think Nathan would enjoy. But every time I made a batch, I was drinking it, but I still couldn't get him to like try it. It was like he would try it and be like, no. And everywhere we would travel then on East Coast, West Coast, we would try to find different breweries, obviously, to go to and try the beer. And if they had kombucha, we would try the kombucha there too, and still nothing. Like, he just was like, no. And it wasn't until we went actually kind of out to Boulder, and I was at the farmer's market downtown Boulder, and I tried Rowdy Mermaid. It wasn't the first time that I had tried Rowdy Mermaid, but it was the second, maybe, or third. And, because I had met Jamba once before that.
Yeah.
And I had brought him a bottle. The guys were out doing something else, and I brought him a bottle. I said, please, just try this. And he's like, ah. And he tried it, and he loved it. And, like, I swear I saw a light bulb go off about how he could start brewing this beverage using his brewing knowledge. And I think that that's kind of where...
Well, and that was the thing is, you know, it was a weird drink that sat on our counter that was very acidic and very sweet, and I just didn't want to have anything to do with it. And then after trying Rowdy Mermaid, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, this is way better balanced. And why have I never applied everything I know about brewing to this brewed product? Yeah. And then I started reading and investigating, and a lot of the nomenclature out there about brewing kombucha is geared towards home brewers and therefore not really in line with trying to make it something you can actually sell to somebody. And I figured out what I think is a better way to brew it. I think it comes out as a more balanced product that still has wonderful probiotics to it, but it doesn't have that overly sweet and overly acidic quality to it. We've figured out a way to balance it.
Yeah, it's very approachable. I think it's more approachable than a lot of even the ones that are on the market nationally right now. So we're pretty happy with that.
And that's a natural, I mean, for you guys, that's a natural progression of the brewery side of the business is what it sounds like. Is that right? Yeah. I mean, whereas we talk to people all the time that they're not even willing to consider a hard seltzer, mm-hmm. let alone, you know, going a slightly different direction and adding kombucha to the menu without just outright buying it from somebody else.
Right. It, for me, it really gives us a diversity, you know, an option for people that come into our tap room. Because again, it goes back to, we're a town of 25,000. There's not a lot of options for people. So it gives somebody a non-alcoholic option to drink, a gluten-free option to drink, a low sugar option to drink. And for me, I love beer, but I can have two, I can drink one, I can drink two, but maybe I shouldn't have the third sometimes. So kombucha gives me that like third drink if I don't want to leave.
At least if you're about to give an interview.
Yeah. Especially then.
So, I mean, one of our previous interviews, the guys at New Terrain flat out told us, hey, if we don't brew it and put it on the menu, the soccer moms are going to sneak it in their purses anyway. Yeah. And at that point right there, it seems like, why would you cut off your arm of one other revenue stream? I don't know. It just seems there's a lot of purists that don't like the idea. And there's a lot of people that are like, look, this is a viable business. I'm just changing a recipe and I double my ability to sell to twice as many people. And it makes the banker in me thinks it's genius, frankly. So,
well, I will say that there may have been a little bit of pushback on my part on starting to do this as part of the business here.
But you lost, let's be clear.
There's a big long list somewhere of everything that Jesse says, we should try this, try this, try this, try this, try this. And then on his side, it says,
No,
maybe tell me more. No.
Yeah. Somebody won that, Jesse. Somebody won the conversation.
It was where I definitely came around, and it is a different line of business to me. I will say that it is something where you do have to keep it very separate from your beer.
You don't
want any kind of cross-contamination. We have separate tanks, separate equipment for our kombucha.
Separate everything, separate pumps. Yeah. We always just talk about how the only thing it really shares is the floor drain. So we're pretty particular about that. And the guys do a great job with that.
Yeah. So let us press you a little bit in terms of business mind then. Can I go back to the hard seltzer beer conversation? There seem to be a lot more hard kombuchas on shelves now.
Yeah.
What are you expecting in the next 12 to 18 months as brewers of beer and hard kombucha for those offerings? I mean, are we going away from hard seltzer and more towards a healthier alternative that is a, you know, a hard kombucha? What are you thinking, you two?
I think people are looking for a more functional beverage these days. They want their beverages to do something more, whether it is an alcohol or not. They want it to provide something for their lifestyle that's going to improve whatever they're doing. And hard kombucha is that. I mean, it is an alcoholic beverage, but it's gluten-free. It's organically sourced, vegan.
Yeah.
And it's something that you can drink that's, to me, more interesting than a seltzer, but lighter than a beer. Mm-hmm.
Why the cans? I mean, just because you don't have a bottling line? I mean, most of the kombuchas, right, that we drink, they're in bottles. Does the can hold up? Does it hold up just as well in a can as it does a bottle?
Absolutely. I personally love cans for packaging just because I think there's, you know, with the beers, there's zero chance of light leak. It's a good seal. It's a great seal, honestly. And it just takes better care of the beverage. And for us, it's much more easily recyclable. We don't have a lot of glass recycling opportunity here in Hastings, and that's something that we do miss on. But I being able to have a can that somebody can take to go and then easily get recycled as well, that was something important to us.
That's awesome. Okay, Jay, I'm going to jump in here. You can have the next question. Let's talk, 2020 a little bit. What have you gone through since March? What has happened? Because that's one of those questions we kind of have to ask.
Yeah,
19, we had some big hopes, and we actually in January on the beer side of things launched a couple different things. We launched our three-turn nitro cans, which was just an agitation. We can without a widget. On our canning line, we actually have a nitrogen doser, so we're able to do that. But again, like I just said, we launched that in February.
And I will say,
that was a little difficult to launch a new product right as everything was kind of falling apart.
Being able to do that, this is the magic that is Jessie. In the prior year, she was able to set up a conversation with Left Hand Brewing, where we were able to go out and actually work with their team on their nitro canning line and look at how they do what they do. I've always loved their beers, and being able to learn something from them was really amazing. And she surprised me with that one time when we were out in Colorado. She awesome. Was like, oh, by the way, tomorrow we're going to Left Hand and you're going to go work with their guys.
I was that puts you guys at a level that's some pretty heavy hitters to put you in that kind of category. I mean, are there a lot of people out there running a canning line with that kind of capabilities?
Well, I know we were the first in Nebraska, and I think we're still the only with a nitro doser, and we're loving it. We find that it's actually extending the shelf life of our beers, just because it's pushing out a little bit more of that oxygen at the end of the canning run. And then, it does give us that capability to do that three-turn nitro. And we're using it.
Yeah,
we didn't know how it would work, and we were always told that this is the way the thing that should happen with it, and until you actually are using it, you just don't know. But it was worth it.
Yeah, but so the beginning of 2020, we had just introduced our three-turn nitro Back Alley Porter and our three-turn nitro beer we make called Popular Blonde. It's a coffee blonde ale, so it works really well with that nitro because it becomes like coffee and cream over a blonde ale. Also one of our most popular beers. And then of course the shutdown occurred, and all of a sudden all distribution stopped, and everything just came to a halt.
Just going back, I know you asked kind of about COVID. I actually got sick in the end of February, and very sick. And so as this was going on, we're kind of dealing with health issues with me and trying to get through all of this, and trying to get my health back in order, and then trying to figure out how to keep this business running and everything like that. And so COVID's not been an easy thing. It's not been an easy thing for anyone out there.
Were you stressed, in that moment? Walk us through those 2 weeks. I mean, you had to be stressing. You have employees, all of that. I mean, what's going through your heads as not just husband and wife, but as business owners and people who others depend upon?
Yeah, we were in shock and trying to figure out just how to keep things going. we were very lucky that our governor here in Nebraska set up some special rules that allowed us to do delivery and to, you know, direct consumer delivery, curbside, mixed drinks to go, stuff like that, that gave us a little bit of capability to continue to serve our community. And of course determined that breweries were essential workers. So we kept going, but it really was pared down to Jesse and I doing everything. As much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, so we had some help with his assistant brewer, Joe, but we have 10 employees. We, at any given time, we have 10 to 12 employees. So yeah, it'd be having to like not have them around and you know, send them home. And a lot of our employees are part-time, they're teachers. So teachers. Yeah, we got a lot of teachers. We like teachers.
Yeah.
We are public school. But yeah, it was a difficult time, but summer came back around and we were able to kind of shake out of it a little bit. I think we're seeing the spikes again right now, but everybody is really, truly, I think, taking it a little more seriously this time around and masking up and doing everything they can to keep as many people safe. So.
And I will say that first time around, again, massive testament to our community here in Hastings, because everybody bought gift cards from local bars and restaurants and us. Everybody was ordering things from us. We had great support from the state and from the city and from our banks as well. You know, this
partners
shutdown occurred and it was like, oh God, what do we do? And, you know, very first conversation with my bank, I was like, hey guys, we just got shut down. What do we do? And they were like, you know what? We're gonna push the next 3 months' payments on your loan to the end of your loan, and just we'll get it taken care of that way.
So yeah, March, April, May, which was a big help.
It was a huge help for us.
It goes back to being able to rally as a community, and we were able to do that here.
So that's summer. That's when it's warm. What have you been doing kind of November 1st or October 1st to now? Like, what's business like? What are you trying to do to obviously get through these very, very difficult months?
Well, right now we are still allowed to have people in our tap room.
Okay.
We have been allowed. It's limited a little bit, and it's, you know, certain rules in place, like you have to be wearing a mask. And once you come in, as long as you're seated, then you can take the mask off. But if you get up to get a beer or get up to use the restroom or whatever, you have to put the mask back on. So there's been a little bit of, you know, training with people on that. But again, we've got a pretty strong community that's amenable to making things work. I think that's something true of all Nebraskans. We work with what we have, you know.
And then what are you guys looking at for 2021? I mean, it's a scary thing to think, but we're halfway through December now. So most businesses, I think, in my mind and the relationships I have, they're already winding down the year and gearing up for strategy and forecasting for the coming year. So what do you guys have on tap, or what are you expecting to be able to pull off for the coming year?
A lot of different things. So we've got the three main brands of kombucha that we've put out. You guys have some of those. There's our wild berry, our black stone fruit, and our hopped up green.
He does, sorry.
I do. Sorry, Jay. I can't tell mine.
We've added a fourth line called ginger fruit, which is a very gingery and peach quality to it that we've introduced. And we by February, we plan to introduce our lavender bud kombucha as well, which... Lavender bud, when she asked me to make a lavender kombucha, I was like, that's awful. And it is now my...
He's really coming around to all this, isn't he, Jesse?
Yeah. It doesn't taste like lavender smells. To me, it tastes like a spiced cider kind of quality.
Okay.
And it's amazing on its own. It's even better if you throw a little bit of whiskey in it with a dash of lemon.
Noted. Okay.
Yeah.
Kombucha is an excellent mixer. You can make a really great mixed drinks with it. We do that one with the lavender bud. With the wild berry, we mix vodka in with that. Hopped up green is a straight green tea kombucha that we then dry hop like a beer. Okay. So it has a slight beer quality to it already. You throw a little bit of tequila and triple sec in it, you've got a really light margarita.
Ooh. Yeah, so we're talking this whole can, which I think is what we sent you. 2 grams of sugar, 15 calories. So you're got a really nice beverage on its own, but great mixer as well.
Wait, you guys need to share some recipes with us then so I can put them up on social media when we're posting these stuff. Because, yeah, a lot of people overlook kombucha as a mixture. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
And we're approaching the time of year where I need way more hard alcohol in my life than I do anything else. So
we all right now.
Well, I mean, so we've got the kombuchas that we're working on. Like you mentioned, we're doing the hard kombucha as well. We really introduced that pretty much during the shutdown. So we have our First Street kombucha. We have a blood orange and a coconut lime flavor. The coconut lime, you know, when they started allowing us to do mixed drinks, we started making bucharitas. A little bit of tequila and triple sec with this, you got a coconut margarita there.
Oh my God. It's phenomenal.
But it's 4% alcohol on its own, and it's a wonderful drink, nice and light. My next project within the booch world is to, I would like to do an IPK, an India Pale Kombucha.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Okay. Tell us more.
Go a little hoppy with that.
What hops are you going to use?
I'm not certain on that one yet. I want to experiment a little. And we've been doing in our tap room a really fun line of nitro beers, just because I'm a big fan of nitro beers. I think it's one of those things that doesn't get a whole lot of attention.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of opportunity there. We just had an amazing beer that we brewed with another brewery called Biz Major out of Omaha. Okay. We did a mulberry milkshake IPA on nitro. That was phenomenal.
Wow.
Yeah. And mulberries, because they grow native here in Nebraska. And, I would like to do more of those. Just some fruited nitro beers. That would be interesting. Alongside our, you know, we do a Coco Corazon is an imperial chocolate stout that we do. And so we'll be bringing back the things that we've done in the past.
Let's talk native, though, for a second, because we haven't once mentioned Nebraska's native flower, the corn husk.
Yeah. Well, losing to Iowa. I thought they said
I'm not
a
worried about
flower.
The corn huskers, Sam. Settle down. But I'm trying to figure out, like, you guys, it's a state that's basically blanketed in the product. I mean, is there – and forgive me for sounding ignorant, but like, I mean, is there a way to integrate corn or a byproduct other than corn syrup into what you're doing now?
Yeah, no, it's used in a lot of different beers. You can use a corn products as an adjunct. We don't do a lot with corn at our place, but I know several breweries that have. We do a lot of integration of locally. We have, I'd say, about 30 to 40% of our hops are grown here in Nebraska. So we've got a lot of people doing that. And then we try to integrate other products that are grown here as well. When doing a Belgian style beer, the traditional way to brew it is with a Belgian candy sugar of some sort to fortify it. I personally love using local honey instead, just because I think it adds a very interesting wild aspect to it. And it does allow me to integrate a little bit more of the terroir here, you know?
One of the, kind of going back to hop on the train, one of the surprise stops that we did, you know, we have breweries lined up, but then one little brewery that we were able to pop into as we were over at visiting Black Project, I think.
Yeah, we were visiting
them at Black Project, and then we walked down the street and we ran across the Dos Luces.
Yeah.
Wow, that was cool. That was
eye-opening.
That was a lot of fun, and we had a great time there, and I really thoroughly enjoyed the drinks there.
I'd had a tepache before, but I'd never had a pulque. And or if that's pronouncing it correctly, I have no idea.
No, I think you nailed it. You nailed it. Judd had to pronounce it for Jay and I, so I think you came very close.
They had a rum barrel aged 14% pulque that was just phenomenal. So
yeah, awesome stuff.
And so that really opened my eyes to what we could do with corn as a base here in Nebraska. And,
yeah. What do you do for, as we kind of wrap this up, what do you guys do for like barrel aged stuff? Are you able to get barrels out there? Do you do that kind of stuff for either kombucha or beer?
There's no transportation in or out of Hastings, Nebraska, Sam.
I'm being very serious.
Can't go anywhere on the train.
Everybody has Laws barrels here because they're just kind of everywhere. They get, you know, Stranahan's barrels. But I mean, what do you do out there?
We've got several barrel suppliers here in Nebraska. I will say some of my favorite beers that we've barrel aged, I've been able to utilize. There's a brewery and distillery in Omaha called Brickway.
Okay.
That does excellent whiskeys. All of their products are wonderful. I was able, so I met Zach, the owner and distiller and brewer, whatever you want to call him, of Brickway years ago at a conference. And I kind of pulled him aside at one moment and I was like, hey man, I really love your whiskey. And I was just wondering, you know, would it be possible for me to use one of your barrels for one of my beers at some point? And he was like, I don't know. We don't normally do that. We keep those in house. And I kept pestering him about it. And it was about a year later, I happened to stop at the brewery and I walked to the back. They had just finished brewing and he was standing drinking some Spanish brandy while staring at this wall of barrels.
Walking to the back of their brewery is dangerous too.
Yeah. Anytime I walk into their brewery, somebody there goes, you need an IPA, and okay, just hands me beer. It's a dangerous crew to hang out with. But we were standing back there talking, and there was a pause in the conversation, and we're both staring at these barrels of whiskey aging. And I was like, Zach, when are you going to let me use one of those barrels? And he said, why don't you ask me nicely? Oh. And I said, can I please use one of those barrels? And he's like, yeah, here you go. And he gave me a barrel that they just emptied, and I was like, I have to leave. Okay. And ran away.
And before then, you change your mind.
Yeah, exactly. And since then, we've bought barrels from them. And there are other breweries here in Nebraska that have used their barrels as well. Pull amazing flavors out of the wood there that I just love. And I love the way it works with our beers. So that's my absolute favorite. We also have Midwest Barrel Supply, who does an amazing job. Ben does a great job of keeping a great supply of barrels on hand. And takes really good care of them so that when you do get them in-house, you know you've got something clean and ready to work with.
Yeah, we haven't done a kombucha yet in one, but it's definitely on our list of things to do.
Yeah.
Just try it, right? Throw it in a barrel and see what happens in 8 months.
Well, you two, like, thank you for continuing to bring good beer and good kombucha, just good craft to the Midwest, because I think it's kind of overlooked and much appreciated. Jesse and Nathan, before we get you off of the interview, how do we find your stuff? Where can we go? Plug whatever you want to plug. We want to hear it.
Sure. You can find, I think we just froze a little. You can find our beer, firststreetbrewing.com is where you can find more information about us. We're distributed throughout Nebraska and obviously come visit us in Hastings. We'd love to serve you a beer across the counter. And then Ensign Beverage is where you'll find more about the kombucha.
Yep, and grocery stores across the state are now having it on their shelves. Wow. Hopefully out there in Denver, we just were approved for the Rocky Mountain region. Nice. For Whole Foods. So hopefully maybe someday, sooner than later, you'll be able to find it out in Colorado, the kombucha, which would be really a cool thing for us.
Well, tell us what
keep us posted on that. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You two, thank you so much for doing this interview. We really, really appreciate it. And the next time Jay and I come through Hastings or on I-80, we will definitely stop.
What do you mean next time? Like, it's close enough. We could just do it.
No, we probably just should. You're right.
5-hour drive. Hop on the train.
No, I'm just thinking, like, we need to plan this ahead. Nebraska and Iowa play in Lincoln next year. I think we need a road trip. Yes, we'll have to do this.
I think we'd need an extra day to get from Hastings to Lincoln then at that point.
You guys have cots in the brewery that we could sleep on?
We can figure something out for you.
We'll send you an invite to our beer festival, too, called Downtown Do the Brew. And like I said, it's on year 10, and so it's a very developed beer festival that happens right here downtown. We typically get 20 to 30 brewers actually to come here. So it's a good opportunity to try a lot of different Nebraska beers in one location.
And let us know.
Great Nebraskan Beer Fest. I love it.
I like the train thing. Let's make this happen next summer. As long as everything's safe, we would love to help you out for sure.
That'd be great.
And next time you're just in Denver sampling our beer, let us know.
Please. Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. It was an honor to talk to you and meet you, and be safe. Okay. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Cheers.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.
When they come to tea.